The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome back to K4 Wins, the big show where we handicap all games, and we do it again this week. We have Case Keeper up in the upper left-hand corner. Of course, he is the Las Vegas Sun, chief editor, and he does the one. He's been out there for a long period of time. We like to go ahead and use him as an anchor right below me. Kip Kiefer, executive director of the Birmingham Racecourse Casino. And, of course, Kai Gregory down in the bottom left-hand corner. He is the man, the myth, the legend. He knows everything there is about handicapping, period, because he's done it on both sides. I'm Tony Curry, ESPN host, as well as doing sports radio for nearly 35 or 40 years. We've got some huge college games to get into. Auburn, Oklahoma, Florida, Miami, Illinois, and Indiana. In the National Football League, what is up with the Jays? Jaden, JJ, Joe, Justin, all out, looks like, for this next week. Killing me for Joe Burrow, the fact that it looks like a little turf toe is going to keep him out 3 months. We'll talk with Case to see how those have changed the plans with my Cincinnati Bengals, of all things, now 2-0 on the season for the first time forever, too, which is kind of amazing. And on top of that, we got some Major League Baseball to get into as we wrap up the last couple of weeks here of the Major League Baseball season. First, Kai, how did we do this past weekend on K4 Winners?
I will say, before I get into that, please don't ever call me the legend
again. Yeah, yeah, I was thinking the same thing. He might be a man and a myth, but he is not the legend.
Not the legend. Anyway, I got some agreement there. Last week, not bad. We were 12-6-1 over the weekend. So the two weekends when you have the NFL in there, we're 26-12-2 on a Saturday and Sunday. So not too shabby. Year to date, 777. And 419. So I like the 777 on there. Pretty good. 64.9%.
Time to hit the casinos. So with triple sevens, that's good. I like that.
And the first under of the year cashes with the Notre Dame under 10.5.
Oh, man.
There you go. That's hard to believe. And we talked about that on the show yesterday. We did a special Kiefer and Curry show. We have Notre Dame and Clemson. There's a good shot 4 weeks into the season. They may both be out. Clemson's got a 4% chance of making the playoffs. Notre Dame is 0-2. That's what you get when you start the season with a tough-ass schedule. But, man, I mean, all of a sudden, Case, Notre Dame and Clemson, a couple of squads that a lot of people had their first 12, at least Clemson going in as a preseason number 16, man, what is going on? And I will be the first to admit, I throw my hands up. Kip Kiefer, you know, was talking about Georgia Tech. My son was calling me saying, Dad, I'm telling you, he believes that Syracuse has got a great opportunity to take not only the game this weekend, but get inside that 17.5 this weekend. And I'm like, what is going on with Clemson? Their play calling is horrible.
Well, not what I want to hear, because I bet some Clemson 16.5, minus 16.5 at open. I still actually like them. I think they'll probably get back on track here. I'm not high on this Syracuse team. It seems like they lost a lot of guys in the portal, and it seems like all those guys have gone on to do well somewhere else. I think they were fortunate to even beat UConn in overtime a couple weeks ago. So actually, I like Clemson in that game. But that being said, Clemson's been a huge disappointment. I think, man, if they got in the playoff, I just feel like it'd be a travesty. They're really going to have to turn something around. I don't think there's any chance they're one of the best teams. I have more sympathy for Notre Dame. I still think this Irish team, I mean, can beat anyone on a good day. They lose two games just barely. I mean, obviously, we know that the crazy fashion the Texas A&M game happened in. I mean, I'd still have Notre Dame like a fringe top five team in the country. This on my power, not if I'm voting, you know, resume based what you're doing on, but in a predictive sense, you know, going up against someone like, let's look right now, just roughly, I'd have them on a neutral field like a touchdown favorite over Clemson. So it tells you I have a huge difference between those two teams, despite Notre Dame being 0-2. I think there's some crazy situations that got them into that. They're like a 4-touchdown favorite against Purdue this week. That's one I have nothing on. I'm not sure. I like this Purdue team. I think Barry Odom's at it again. I think he's a great coach, probably the most underappreciated in the nation. That was one I probably talked about on here last week. I loved them getting 21.5 against USC. It was an easy cover. I could see them giving Notre Dame fits too, but I expect the Irish to make a run of this. We'll see if they could possibly get to the playoff with two losses. But I'm hoping the Clemson talk's done, because I didn't love their hype all offseason, and I'm still haven't seen anything to change my opinion through 3 weeks.
Outside of USC, who on their schedule can beat Notre Dame in the next 10 games? I mean, that's really something to look at. I mean, maybe USC can, and maybe Navy gives them some trouble. But I remember me being all over Navy's jock last year, going into the Notre Dame game talking about that, and they got beat by what, 742 points?
Yep, 741.
Yeah, and Notre Dame, too, again, they're going to have to be playing for points now. They're going to have to get those 13 committee members to actually start looking at them, because they kind of had their own little spot there in the playoffs, and now they've kind of given that up to perhaps another group of five squads. They're going to have to not only win, but they're going to have to look impressive doing it. I do think, I mean, obviously this is not Northern Illinois like they lost to last year. They lost to a couple really good teams that could possibly make the Final 12 as well, so we'll see what happens. Kyle, what were some things that stuck out to you, man? It was just, for me, everything that could have gone wrong from a future standpoint, from a day standpoint, from everything else. But what did you learn from college football this past weekend, Kyle?
Well, some of the things that I've got written down here, which one of the first ones is a great $2 million investment, UCLA. Now you're buying your coach out, but you're paying Nico. Great job. Clemson is one loss away from going under 9.5. Mississippi State needs one win, and they played Northern Illinois this week to get to their over 3.5. Vandy needs two wins for their over 4.5. Their next two games, Georgia State and Utah State. Very easy, I think, for them to start 5-0. Florida. One win. You know, I popped up the under 7.5. Notice we are not talking about South Carolina right now. But anyway, the under 7.5 on them, they have one win. They're 9 games left for 6 wins. I'm sorry, to get 7 wins. They got to win 7 of 9 to go over. They've got Miami, Texas, Texas A&M, Mississippi State, maybe, but Mississippi State looks better, Georgia, Kentucky, Ole Miss, Tennessee, Florida State. And then the other thing that stuck out to me is seeing NC State go to 3-0. We all jumped on it when Case said over 6.5. They're 3-0. They've got to get 4 wins with this schedule. Duke, Virginia Tech, Campbell, Notre Dame, Pitt, Georgia Tech, Miami, FSU, North Carolina. Very possible. If the moron kicker makes a field goal for Tennessee, all the things that all the pundits are talking about Georgia, they'd be saying about Tennessee right now.
That is true. Kip, what did you see from college football this past weekend? Things that stuck out to you?
Well, not to stand on my soapbox and pat myself on the back, but nobody ever seems to be lining up to do that. I made some pretty bold proclamations to start the season. One of those was Texas was way overhyped. The Arch Manning hysteria was absurd. And I think we're pretty much at the point where we can kind of declare that was pretty accurate. I mean, of course, Texas can rebound and go on some kind of roll, but I just don't see it in this team. I didn't like how they played last year. They went a long way. They got into the semifinals of the tournament, but they just didn't win impressively. They never. I don't know. There's something wrong with this Sarkisian approach, and maybe it was the tidbit that came out a couple of weeks ago where he said, "You know, I'm not a rah-rah guy. I don't talk to my players much." It's college football. It's not the NFL. Maybe Sark's in the wrong league. I don't know, but Texas doesn't play with any emotion. I know they've got a good collection of players, but I didn't see them going in. I also, of course, did not buy the Clemson hype. I thought Clemson had a lot of returning starters on a team that was good last year, but not elite. And when they played elite teams, they got slaughtered. So I didn't buy into any of that hype. And I did say, and I'm not down on Notre Dame. I thought with a new quarterback, it might be problematic that they opened at Miami and then played a team that I thought was being disregarded in Texas A&M. I said on numerous shows, including this one, I fully expect Notre Dame will be 0-2 after the first 2 weeks. That wasn't really anti-Notre Dame. That was just the schedule. I'm obsessed looking at preseasons and how things are going to develop with who teams play. And it amazes me when somebody beats a tomato can down to a bloody pulp, then everybody says, well, so-and-so's back and so-and-so's playing well now. And Georgia goes to Tennessee with a lot of five stars making their first start on defense. Heupel game plans extremely well for that game, hits them with a blitzkrieg in the first quarter that Kirby has to scramble to adjust. He's creeping his safeties up on the line of scrimmage like they still have Dylan Sampson, and Heupel punched him right in the mouth. But Georgia was resilient enough to rebound and kind of change the trajectory of that game. Tennessee had a couple of really athletic plays in the second half to snatch balls out of the air that became long touchdowns. But when the game was on the line, Heupel found a way to get conservative, which makes no sense. I think he's a great X's and O's and scheme coach, but in game, he cost them a lot of games. And that happened on Saturday, in my opinion. But I heard somebody.
But Georgia had some help, just like Texas A&M had some help on the no holding call there at the end that was brutally obvious for Texas A&M when they're driving in. The guy just turned around and grabbed him and tackled him. And Georgia had some help on the uncatchable pass that they called pass interference, which was horrendous, horrendous call.
Yeah, I mean, I don't discount in the SEC, you're going to have it's the best conference in the world with the worst officials in the world, most overzealous, and they miss calls. I'm still thinking about the Georgia-Alabama championship game in 2023 when Isaiah Bond was given a catch that wasn't even reviewed. As soon as they came out of network break, They said that was not a catch. He didn't control that at all. And it was never even looked at. This is the worst officiating crew on earth. I think I've got a lot of theories on that. But the bottom line is, and I'll concede that Georgia had a lot of things go their way, and you have to when you, you know, pull the game out from seemingly impossible stretches. But my point is, now I'm hearing people say, well, Georgia has serious questions on defense. That was a huge challenge to go into Neyland with their first road game in the SEC. And you don't hear, I just, again, I'll say it again. I've said it 1,000 times. In this early part of the season, it's not how you play, it's who you play. And I'll throw that on the table for conversation.
No, yeah, I think you guys threw out a lot of great stuff out there. I do think we finally saw the quarterbacks that we were hoping to see, both with Aguilar and Gunnar Stock. They came out of their shells a little bit. I thought it was a great ball game. And obviously, you mentioned the fact that Tennessee kind of gave that game away. Georgia's got a way of winning football games like that. Kirby Smart does. He's done it 9 times in a row. And, of course, he's owned Josh Heupel. They get the 3-point victory, giving up 4 points. It was one of my 15 losses I had on Saturday. This weekend, I think it's really interesting. The Auburn Tigers only catching 6.5 on the road to Oklahoma. They could start the season 4-0. It's time to start talking about your Auburn Tigers, number 22 in the country. Ole Miss has not looked Austin, the quarterback, has not 4 touchdowns, 4 picks, has not looked like that Ole Miss Lane Kiffin type of quarterback. They're only giving up 12.5 to Tulane. My South Carolina Gamecocks have basically, and I can't believe it's this early in the season, they look horrible. And, of course, they're catching 13.5 on the road to Missouri. And then, of course, I think a really interesting game, Florida-Miami. Miami finally woke up. Of course, those Bulls of South Florida this past weekend, they bludgeoned them, and they're only giving up 7.5 to the Florida Gators, which is going to be going on this weekend, too. So I think it's going to be good. And your Alabama Crimson Tide for all you local folks. Of course, they got the bye week. They do have that game on the road at Georgia. Give me a line on that Alabama-Georgia game, Case. Going on, I guess, a week from Saturday, I'm hearing 3.5, 4. What do you expect for that ball game?
I actually haven't looked. I'm sure it's up some places. My first reaction would be Georgia, 4.5. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Yeah, that's 4.5 actually is at FanDuel right now. That seems exactly right to me off the top of my head. I don't know. I mean, Georgia's offense was incredible. Gunnar Stockton passed every test I give him. I'm a little more alarmed about the defense than Kip. They've leaned on this such a great defense for so many years. They've set the standard so high. I think they gave up like 7.5 yards per play to Tennessee. They haven't given up that much production in like 5 or 6 years. I mean, I feel like when they were in these tight games before, they could always lean on having, you know, NFL guys at almost every starting spot. So I don't know. I mean, it was a huge win, obviously. I think it cements them in my mind as the favorite in the SEC. But, you know, if week one was an aberration with Alabama, which it's quite possible at this point with as good as they've looked the last.
But it's arguable because who have they beaten? Wisconsin probably had the worst offense I've seen in college football in years with the backup quarterback. They had no weapons. They had no threat to do anything offensively. I Alabama fans are all giddy now and saying, okay, we're back online. They're going to have to go beat somebody that's a decent opponent before I'm on.
They cover the spread, and that will suffice for a lot of Alabama
good
fans.
For them. One of the things and I agree with Kip a lot, you got to adjust for opponent. It's something I do. But, I mean, there's predictive measures that you're there's a lot of things predictive-wise you can take out of these games where teams kill the other team. I mean, it's not like they were just barely getting by. I mean, both of these games were just absolute slaughters. I mean, even going back 2 weeks ago, like, UL Monroe should not lose by 70 points or whatever. So I've been impressed. It more looks the part. And I'm also just going back on my priors. I mean, going into the season, I was higher on Alabama than Georgia. So, again, I would not have a bet on it right now if it was 4.5. I really feel like you could make the case either way.
Yeah.
And well, I know we're blowing Arch Manning up too, and for every reason too. But again, you're talking about who you're playing. San Jose State, UTEP, now they got Sam Houston. Do we need to see a 6-touchdown, 0-pick game from Arch Manning to say, hey, listen, this is the real deal? I don't think we're seeing near what we're going to see from Texas. I don't think we're seeing the playbook. They only lost by 7 at Ohio State, which, of course, it'll arguably could be one of the best teams in the country right now.
But I'm back to my point, Tony. Is Ohio State one of the best teams in the country?
It's way too early. I mean, it's way too early. I mean, that's all I'm saying. But I mean, anytime you play Ohio State within 7 at the shoe or up and up in Ohio State, you're playing a good ball game.
It's not the Ohio State from last year. And now they've played Grambling and whoever held they and Ohio. I think we're all guilty sometimes of these brand name teams. Well, they beat Ohio State. Well, this Ohio State team, are they are they a competent team that we need to say?
Ohio State's going to win 10 games, are they not?
Well, they can't help it. They don't play anybody.
I mean, they're in the Big Ten. So, I mean, that's all.
Texas has given up 40.5 against Sam Houston State, who's 0-3. Sam Houston's given up 41 to Western Kentucky, 38 to UNLV, 37 to Houston.
Wow.
And the most that Texas has scored yet is 38. It's going to be interesting to see how that at 40.5 covers. I will say that I do think that game, if Texas can score 60, they're sure as hell going to try to.
I'd lay it. I haven't yet, and I probably won't, just because there's something weird going on with Arch. But Sam Houston is terrible. That's the other thing that I think miss in saying, like, oh, well, they haven't played anybody. There's levels to awful. Sam Houston's a lot
that's
worse.
True.
Than UTEP. Yeah. They're a whole lot worse than Ohio, who Ohio's like the second favorite in the MAC now, who Ohio State just beat by 29. So, I'm really tempted, especially if this somehow drops to 39.5. I will be laying it with Texas this week. It has less to do with them. Just I think Sam Houston is dreadful.
Yeah. There's just great games that nobody's talking about, though, I think, out there. I mean, like the Texas Tech at Utah game, SMU at TCU. One that I'm looking for that I really think is going to be good is UNLV at Miami of Ohio, which is a 9 o'clock game for UNLV, just like we saw with Oregon, who started extremely slow at Northwestern. You know, NC State at Duke is going to be a great game. I think West Virginia at your alma mater, Kansas, is going to be a great game as well. So there's a lot of games that you can find real value on and that are going to be great games that the vast majority of the people are not talking about, because let's be honest, people are not thinking about the TCU-SMU game.
So why aren't we talking about UAB?
Which
Tennessee?
Is a huge rivalry. Yeah. Dallas area teams. That's a bigger rivalry than people realize.
What do you want me to say about the Tennessee UAB game?
Why aren't we talking about – well, I mean, that line's also 40. So, I mean, I was just 39.5, 66. If you'll say this, and I did get two things right this past weekend, by the way. 7 games in a row now, Georgia and Tennessee have gone over the first half. It was 24.5. It flew over again, 7 consecutive games that has happened. And I said, take the over in every UAB football game. It's 66.5 this weekend. I'm flying over 66.5. If UAB can score 7, I think it gets there.
I mean, Tennessee may put up 70 on their own. Joey Aguilar on the year is 9 of 13 for 7 touchdowns on his passes over 20 yards. Which Tennessee, I've heard a lot of people talk about it. It's true. Josh Heupel actually trusts him way more than he did Nico or Milton. I mean, they played 3 games. He's thrown 13. Nico threw 50 passes last year over 20 yards. And in 23, Milton only threw 61 yards. I mean, 61 passes over that. He had 10 touchdowns. Nico had 8. Joey's already got 7 on 9 completions. That's going to go about 14 on Saturday.
And certainly not a big game throughout the rest of the United States, but certainly in Oregon, you got the Civil War going on where you have a 35.5 point line. And by the way, we were all feeling for you, Kai, this past weekend. You got backdoored not once, but twice. That you just don't see that very often. When you have one score that's going to push you to a push, and then you have another score late in the game to backdoor, you got hit pretty hard there. So that was a tough loss there for sure. You mentioned Texas Tech, Utah, 17 against number 16. And Utah giving up 3.5. These are some of these games now we're going to start paying attention to, Case, because we're going to be looking at some teams that perhaps will be playing in the playoffs a little bit later on the season. But what do you see in that Utah-Texas Tech game so far?
Yeah, hands down, game of the week to me. I wrote a little bit more about it to lead my college football column this week at LasVegasSun.com if you want. A little surprised with the movement this morning. It was 3.5 across the board yesterday. I didn't make a bet on it, but I had a lean to Utah, and now it's down to 3. I might invest in that. They're the two clear favorites in the Big 12. I know they both kind of had disappointing seasons last year, although I think Texas Tech still ended up winning 8 games. But I mean, they spent more than anyone in the transfer portal this offseason. I think they spent almost $30 million. You kind of have to pay a premium to get these kids to come to Lubbock. And I know Kip's probably not impressed and will bang the drum if they haven't played anybody, but they're beating people by like 60 points in the first half. And again, that's usually pretty predictive. So they look pretty darn good. I know they have some guys hurt. The USC running back they took was out right before the beginning of the year. It does worry me that several of those guys I talked about, they spent that $30 million already out. Utah was a little more measured, but of course got Devin Dampier from New Mexico. And I honestly feel like if he didn't play at Utah, if you throw him on an SEC or Big Ten team, he might be the Heisman favorite right now. Last year, he was an electric runner, but couldn't throw the ball. It looks like he's really progressed, and now he's throwing just exceptionally too. He's the last Heisman bet I made. I think after week one, I jumped on a 35-1. He's down to like 15-1. I mean, production-wise, he's there. We can't get any hype on this kid. Too bad his name's not Devin Manning, or else he'd be like
favorite
right now. But I do think there's going to be some eyeballs on this game. So we'll see. Slight lean to Utah because I think Rice-Eccles is a really tough place to play too. Texas Tech has never been up there. It's at elevation. So I have a strong lean towards Utah, but I get Texas Tech roster-wide probably has the more talent. And it seems like they've taken some money here, but kind of surprised this touch 3 because I do think Utah's the slightly better team, in totality.
I like Utah.
You can like what Utah what now?
I like Utah in the trenches in this game.
Because I still have questions about Texas Tech defensively. Isn't it funny how these teams, even as times change, it's 20 years later, always the book on Texas Tech is they can score a lot of points, but they can't stop anybody. And after spending $30 million, that might be the case again this year when they start playing good teams.
There's no doubt. Kip, you're right here in the Birmingham area, as are myself and Kai. And, of course, we like to talk about SEC football and certainly the Alabama Crimson Tide with the bye week. And we'll talk about them too much. But the Auburn Tigers have a very interesting twist this weekend, going in 3-0. They're catching 6.5 against Oklahoma. Is it time to start talking about Hugh Freeze? Has he got this team right? What have you seen by them? And, of course, owner of the quarterback we've been waiting to see. I know they haven't played anybody, but
we don't have enough evidence. I mean, I was impressed that they went to Baylor and got a win. That was a must for Hugh Freeze. I give a huge check mark for that. But these last 2 weeks, what have we seen?
If they beat Oklahoma this weekend, what will that tell you?
Yeah. They're a 6.5-point dog. Jackson Arnold, that's an unbelievable storyline that I haven't heard a lot of national media talk about, but he returns to the place where he was the most celebrated recruit in years and basically was benched by the third game, had one glorious moment beating Alabama with his legs, which was a preview of a skill set that they didn't really utilize at Oklahoma early in the year, or the script might have been different. But this game has a lot of drama and a lot of storylines. And Oklahoma has been, they passed the first test against Michigan. They went on the road to a bizarre place in Philadelphia and avoided Tony's upset special of all time. Tony Curry would have been on Mount Olympus as a prognosticator, but his Owls let him down.
By the way, and I got to give some credit. You can tell a lot. I know Temple started 2-0 this season, and I'm not putting them in the South Alabama or Sam Houston State areas. I'm not. But they made them look really bad. Oklahoma's a little bit better than I actually thought they were.
I like Temple this week. I forgot who they're playing, but I like Temple this week. Oh, yeah, Troy, that's right, because I think Tech might be a little flat off the Clemson win. But the bottom line is this is a dramatic situation. Mateer getting all kinds of attention. Case's Heisman bet on Mateer looking pretty promising now. He's certainly, if this is a horse race, he's poised in the backstretch to make a big move. So the Mateer-Arnold drama, I think, is really compelling here. But Auburn's going to have to show me this is the first – I'm not saying Baylor's not legit, but Auburn had a good matchup against them. They were a lot bigger, and I thought the game plan for Hugh Freeze was great. They had a lot of design quarterback runs, and Baylor was so undersized compared to Auburn, it negated what Baylor wanted to do, which was get intense pressure and attack from the edges. If the quarterback is just taking a shotgun snap, making a quick read, and taking off, that just completely defuses that whole defensive strategy. So I don't think Oklahoma's going to play that way. Venables has the defense playing really well too. I don't like Auburn's chances at Oklahoma this week.
Okay, so something I want to do, and I want to kind of throw this out every single week. We can start the show with it or put it in the middle, but where the public money is going. I always love these lines because I'm assuming that everyone's going to be all over Ole Miss minus 13 and up against Tulane. I'm just talking about the public, where the public money is all going to be going. I think a lot of people love Georgia this past week just because of the trends that we had. I think a lot of people love Illinois against Duke in week two just because of the numbers. You had a number 11 team playing a team that wasn't even ranked, and it just looks stupid to have a team like that. That's only three-point favorite. But where do you think the public money is going to be going this weekend?
Yeah, well, you asked the right question because it really is thinking and projecting right now because, you know, you talk to any bookmaker, guys taking the bets, like 90% of the action is not coming till Friday night and even Saturday morning. I mean, people just don't bet ahead of time. And, you know, they're paying a premium for whatever they bet when they do that. But I don't know. They seem to not understand that. So, as far as this weekend, the Oklahoma-Auburn game, I don't know if there will be a public side. I feel like that will probably get pretty split action. I don't have a bet on that. I mean, hopefully you were listening. Kip gave me a shout-out for the Mateer bet, but honestly, I feel like he deserves credit. I think the first time we talked about the Heisman, he said he was picking John Mateer, so I might have actually bet it. But Kip was high on that from the beginning. Right before the season, I said there were two teams I unloaded on futures-wise, Oklahoma and Miami, and those are aging pretty well right now. So hopefully that keeps coming. So I'm probably going to sit out this game and just hope Oklahoma gets it done, but I am a little concerned. If it got to 7, I might have some interest in Auburn. I agree that just like body-wise and talent-wise, like this Oklahoma defense is a big step up from Baylor. I feel like Baylor spent their whole budget keeping Sawyer Robertson, and it looks worthwhile. I mean, he's been incredible. But yeah, I do think defensively it's going to be a lot tougher. Now with Arbuckle in place, I trust the Oklahoma coaching staff more. But this should be a great game. I don't necessarily think there's going to be a public side in that. Some of the other big games, I'm trying to think of who the public would be on. I would think, and I agree with this too, I can't believe it's only 7.5. I get it that you can't project him to throw 5 interceptions again, but I do think everyone will be rushing to lay it with Miami against Florida, at least by Saturday morning. Yep. And me too. I think that line's a little short, but I've been loving Miami all year, so it might be a little crazy for me. What are some other big games? I don't know.
Ole Miss Tulane, I think, is another one of those games where you're just looking at SEC squad. Lane Kiffin likes to run points up. You obviously haven't done that.
I bet Tulane plus 12.5. And yeah, I would agree with you. I heard a lot of, when that line kept crashing last week, there was a lot of public money on Ole Miss against Arkansas. Ultimately ends up getting there. I mean, is Ole Miss starting the wrong quarterbacks? I thought Chambliss looked better than Austin Simmons.
So. What a name. Trinidad Chambliss. That sounds like a literary character, but that guy can play.
Yeah, it is interesting. I do think Ole Miss has been like, if you want to talk about this public phenomenon, they've been the ultimate sharps versus squares team this year, public versus pros, because the professionals have been betting against Ole Miss every single week. I mean, you've seen every one of their lines, I think, has gone down like 4 or more points in the first 3 weeks, which is basically unheard of. I think they've still ended up covering 2 out of 3 games.
Yeah.
But then you hear that all the $10, $20, $50 bets are on Ole Miss. So, it's an interesting thing to keep monitoring. I do kind of like Tulane this week, though. I think this is a huge game for them. They're going to want to bolster their case. And I was kind of concerned by the Retzlaff signings. If you're signing a quarterback that late, like, what do you really have offensively? But it's worked out so far, and I just have so much respect for their coaching staff. I don't necessarily think they went out right, but I kind of feel like they keep it close against Ole Miss here.
And Ole Miss Ole Miss got lit up on defense. Remember last year, Lane Kiffin, his hired gun defense was pretty damn effective. This Ole Miss defense, Arkansas scored at will. Ole Miss was lucky to win that game, and that line crashed all the way to 4.5 when the word got out late that Simmons wasn't going to play. He actually had to limp out there and throw a touchdown pass when Trinidad got hurt on a couple plays. But I walked away from that game going, this team can't stop anybody. And I know Arkansas's offense, we talked about Taylen Green last week, that they're potent, but my goodness, Ole Miss's defense looked bad.
Find us on the Coastal Sports Digital Network every single week on Tuesdays and Fridays, 10 o'clock Central Time. So if you're looking for some more plays, and yeah, we like to drop them a little early. If you can buy some lines early, do that. Case is really good at buy those futures. And, of course, we also going to be on Friday morning at 10 o'clock. We'll have a more laser thought process on exactly who we're picking and why coming up here a little bit later on this week. And also, of course, on Tony Curry Radio, get the TKR app. 100,000 folks have already done that. You can listen to the show as many times you want the TKR app. And, of course, where we get your podcast and our YouTube channel, it is the K4 Wins YouTube channel, which is live every Tuesday and Friday as well. Let's get into a little pro action here. Jaden, JJ, Joe, Justin, I just was like, oh man, Joe Burrow has just been banged up. It seems like his entire career when he's healthy. I saw, Adam Schefter had something like their offensive line for the Cincinnati Bengals has been like in the bottom five in every year that Joe's been playing. He shouldn't have won an MVP last season, and there he is with his turf toe thing, and he's going to be out 3 months. What does that change for the Cincinnati Bengals and their futures case going in? Obviously, it's funny because they're 2-0 for the first time in forever. They finally get another win against Jacksonville, but now Joe's going to be out. I know Jake Browning, he looked pretty decent. He did 3 picks there in the ballgame for Cincinnati, but he did get the victory.
Yeah, we'll say, and when this happened 2 years ago, the last 7 weeks of the season, the Bengals offense actually by all measures was a little bit better with Jake Browning than Joe Burrow. That's not me saying Browning's better than Burrow or anything. I'm just saying I do think he's an above average backup, and you have those 2 wins banked now. I think what this does is really limits their ceiling. I mean, I don't think unless Lamar Jackson gets hurt, I think there's almost no way they can win the division now. There's no way they're competing for the 1 seed. But they're 2-0 with a decent backup. They have a tough stretch of the schedule coming up. I do think they're, you know, I was really high on the Bengals coming into the year, and it was because I thought they could reach those heights with the offense they had. I think now they're kind of more in the position to me that everyone else expected with a poor defense, although I do think it's a little bit better. I think you just hope Browning can keep them afloat about 500. And you can finish 9-8 or 10-7 and sneak into the playoffs. I feel like right now they're right in that like 500 morass. I will say, and the Bengals offensive line has been mediocre year after year, but I do think they're taking a little bit more heat, and this is like a pet peeve of mine that I don't think people have caught on to. It's one of the hallmarks of analytics and all the data science. We've realized sacks are more of a quarterback stat than an offensive line stat. I think the offensive line takes way too much heat for sacks. Joe Burrow, as great as he is, holds on to the ball way too long. You know, he's gotten sacked at just such an alarming rate his whole career, and every time I hear someone throw out those stats, it's the Bengals just don't protect him. They don't give him any guys. I mean, 2 years ago, they spent like $50 million on upgrading the offensive line. I know they probably paid too much, but I think it was like Orlando Brown at the time. But he it's not like he's playing with no one in front of him. Sacks are way more attributable to quarterbacks than offensive line. This happened with Alabama. Speaking of you guys locally, last year, I mean, Milroe is just threw the ball. Alabama has like an NFL guy at every single position. And, you know, people are giving their offensive line crap. So I do think that's one thing that not got really off topic there, but I do think Browning is a little bit Browning's sack rate will be way less than Burrow's, and it's not because the offensive line all of a sudden got a lot better.
And you know, you saw that with Joe at LSU too. I mean, he held onto the football too. He made a lot of long plays, and he held on the football a bit at LSU. In college, you can hold on to the football a little longer if you can read your defenses, for sure.
Yeah, so yeah, the Bengals, I mean, it hurts, and I'm sure if you're a Bengals fan, you're beside yourself, but you know, a lot of people thought this was a sneak into the playoffs and see what can happen here anyway. I thought maybe it was a little bit better than that. Now I think that's really what it is at 2-0 with a backup quarterback coming in.
Since we got you on, too, and, of course, you're the inside guy there for the Las Vegas Raiders, only putting up 9 points this past weekend, offensively speaking, not a good look. And now, of course, you're taking on a Washington squad on the road this weekend, catching 5.5. What do you expect to see from your Raiders?
What a break for probably Jaden Daniels not playing. I will say the Raiders, I had a really good NFL week, but it ended in a whimper because I loved the Raiders last night against the Chargers. And, man, you got the full Geno Smith experience, the two ends of the extremes in 2 weeks. I mean, the guy looked phenomenal in week one, like one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. I think he was second to only Josh Allen with 362 passing yards. Just looked like he couldn't miss. Then last night against the Chargers, he was just, I mean, dreadful. He looked like a third string emergency quarterback.
0 for 12 on passes over 10 yards last night.
Yeah, three picks, and it could have easily been six. I mean, some of that is the Chargers, a team I got to tip my cap to. I was really down on coming into the season. Their defense, they let everyone I thought notable and good almost go. They have a bunch of no names, but they just look amazing. I wasn't watching the broadcast. I was at the game, but they had it on the monitors and it looked like they were talking about Jesse Minter, their defensive coordinator, a lot. My respect for that guy's gone through the roof. I mean, he was Michigan's defensive coordinator when they won the national championship. I think he had a lot to do with that and didn't get any credit with the Harbaugh specter. Last night, he had a great game plan. Again, the Chargers don't have many brand name proven dudes on defense, and they've just harassed both teams they've played.
And Khalil Mack got hurt early.
Yeah, so. Khalil Mack got hurt in the first quarter. And offensively, another reason I was down on this team, I thought they did a terrible job last year of bringing the best out of Justin Herbert. Greg Roman forever had run these offenses from like the early 2000s. It really kind of coached him his way out of the NFL until he got another chance with Harbaugh because that's his guy. And then against the Chiefs, they come out throwing. They're manufacturing looks for Herbert. It looks like the offense is supposed to look. I kind of took that as a one-off, thinking they'd have to score a lot of points to the Chiefs. But they did the same thing last night against the Raiders. So I give Harbaugh a lot of credit in finally kind of moving forward his offensive system. Don't want to overreact to two games, but, man, I look like I was dead wrong about the Chargers. They look awfully good. And the Raiders, it might just be a season like that where it depends if you get the good one or the bad one, because that's Geno Smith's playing style ultimately. He can make all the throws, but he can also make you think, how is this guy even a starter in the NFL? I will say if Jaden Daniels doesn't play, even on a short week, you got to like their chances against Marcus Mariota. We'll see how the Daniels news progresses as the week goes on.
It's amazing, too, because, you know, you mentioned the fact that Joe Burrow goes out. They're only catching 3.5 against a squad. Obviously, a lot of people were looking at last year under Sam Donald, and obviously now J.J. McCarthy out. They're only giving up 3.5, and I know that's because J.J.'s out as well. But you look at the lines just for the National Football League this weekend. That's why you need experts doing the 7.5, 3.5, 2.5, 1.5, 3.5, 5.5, 4.5, 3.5, 1.5, 2.5, 2.5, 7.5, 1.5, 1.5, 1.5, 5.5. I mean, it doesn't matter. It's like, holy shit. I mean, that is some impressive stuff. And I that just goes to show just how, I hate the word parody, but it just goes to show how great these players are from week in and week out. There is not a Colorado Rockies team in the National Football League this year. Every team's got a shot to win every single time they go out and play, Kip.
That's the way it looks to me. I went down that same list you just described last night, and I would look at the matchups. I say, I like so and so, and I look at the line and go, yeah, I don't know about that. I think it's brutally tough, and to give Case some accolades here, Case has devised a system where he's been phenomenally successful on the NFL for an extended period of time. And, you know, I feel like I have a lot better ability in college football a lot of times to prognosticate, because it seems like the wave a certain team on and who they've played and all those factors that I put so much stock in the NFL, that really doesn't apply. It's not a game of emotion. It's not a game of tradition. And there are rivalries, of course, and there are some games that you can look at the intangible factors, like the opening night Baltimore-Buffalo game. But the bottom line is the NFL is, to me, just a really tough oyster to open. I really have a difficult time just looking, especially early in the week, at the lines and coming up with a lot of strong, you know, leans right off the bat, because, I mean, it takes a lot of analytics and I don't know, gut feelings, for lack of a better term, toward the end of the week on which side to go with. So props to anybody who can navigate through the NFL. I think it's damn tough.
Kai, you watch the lines, man, from the minute they come out. And one of those games, very tutorial of what is happening in the National Football League, the Detroit Lions. Obviously, they look like the Lions of last year, put up 41 this past week. And now, of course, they come in and they're playing a Baltimore squad who a lot of people have going to the Super Bowl, and they're only catching 5.5 early on. What do you like in that ball game?
I would probably go with the Detroit right there. But I'm telling you, I've never seen, in my opinion, 2 weeks in a row, especially Sunday and Monday, Vegas have such horrendous halftime lines. I mean, if anybody was paying attention last night, in my opinion, if you're watching the game, Tampa Bay and Houston, you know, they score 24 points in the first half, but also two huge plays lead to that. So, and then the over-under comes in at 21.5. In the second half. It was a very easy, super easy under bet. I mean, and it takes a last second touchdown to even get you to 15 points. And then,
so when you say horrible, you're saying it's good for the better, correct?
Oh, yeah, absolutely good for the better.
If they miss on the line, yeah.
Exactly. So you keep saying horrible. I'm thinking that sounds pretty good to me.
I understand, but I'm just saying, even in the Vegas game, you know, they score 23 points in the first half. And if you're watching the game, Oakland looked like they had no chance of doing anything. They had zero rushing attack. Geno couldn't do anything. And then the over-under comes in at 21.5 again. Just a severely easy under bet looking at those games. And then and then some of the ones, the Sunday night game also, it was the exact same thing, looking at the Falcons and Vikings, the way that game went. And then to see a 21.5 over in the second half, I mean, it just boggled my mind. Usually the 24.5 one is where you want to go, is where people will go, and they'll do 23.5 if they want you to bet over. But 21.5 to me just begged you to go under, and you easily won. And it's just to me, it was just something for the player to make very easy money if they were paying attention.
And that's why we do what we do here. K4Wins.com, K4Wins.com, and K4Winners on the X format, not to mention Instagram as well. And, of course, live on our YouTube channel, K4Wins.com. Check us out here. Dallas, Chicago. That's always a good ball game in Chicago. Case, giving up 1.5. Chicago's looked pretty good this year. Dallas is always Dallas. Everyone wants to bet against them. Everyone wants to jump on board them. This looks like it could be a nice little black and blue division type of game. What do you say?
It should be a lot of points, I guess. I think part of my success for the NFL that Kip talked about is I like to bet super early, especially now. I bet a week ahead a lot because the NFL is so popular that now they put out look ahead lines. So last week I made two bets on these games, and one has aged amazingly. Luckily, it's the bigger one, and one has aged terribly. I bet Dallas +3 last week. I just did not see why they should be a 3-point dog to Chicago. I had it like pick 'em. Now it has basically gone to pick them, so I age well on that. However, I also bet the under 47.5, because this is before Sunday's games, where Dallas could just not stop anyone. Russell Wilson put up almost 500 passing yards. I mean, Micah Parsons has never looked better. I know we gave out the stat on the show when he got traded that Dallas had been like a top 10 defense by, I think, EPA when he's on the field, and bottom 5 when he's off. And they just look like they have no punch now. I know that they signed Jadeveon Clowney, who's my age now, to be an edge rusher off the street. We'll see if that fixes them. And Chicago's defense doesn't look much better. They're really banged up in the secondary. And that's the one thing Dallas does have is still some good receiving options. So seems like a game there should be points, and I'm going to be hoping to get lucky because I, for some reason, bet under 47.5. It's 50 now. I don't think either of these teams are going anywhere. I'm not bullish on either of them long term, but should probably be a fun game to watch. If Caleb Williams doesn't get right here, I don't know if he ever is, because the Dallas defense just looks dreadful.
Yeah.
There's just not enough team in the National Football League, and I'm sitting there watching Houston, the Texans, and, of course, another game I had this past week that they lost by a point. Of course, they're going on the road now. Jacksonville, a squad that's got beat by my Cincinnati Bengals, but they play a different type of football at Jacksonville. They play much better at home than they do. And, you know, from week to week, you know, you just expect a team to throw a dud out there. But a Philadelphia Eagles squad, and I don't know if you looked at the numbers of the last 2 or 3 years, that team is one of the most consistent ball teams. They are what they are. They play what they play. you're always going to get a good effort from those guys. And it seems like, and of course, they get the Kansas City Chiefs, another loser I had this weekend. I just, you know, catching the Chiefs plus the point and a half. Why not? They couldn't get it done. But the Philadelphia Eagles are probably one of the most consistent teams I've ever seen in the National Football League. And again, this weekend, they're only giving up 3 to L.A. Case, what do you see in that ballgame?
I would lean towards Philadelphia there. I get it. If you're just going based off the first 2 weeks, that the Rams have certainly looked better. I mean, the Eagles offense has really been pretty pedestrian, but you're right. They do what they do. You know, if they hit a high, like they did at the end of last year, where the passing game's really clicking and the defense turns into the best in the league, then their upside is immense, but just their floor is so solid because, I think a big part of it's the tush push too. If you get in a short yardage situation, you're getting the first down. So
how is that legal? Yeah,
I very slightly lean Philadelphia here, but it's a tough one. They have not been fun to watch. I don't think they've been impressive. I'm still a little bit down on them compared to the market. Like they're still rated as the second best team in the NFL. Behind Philadelphia, if you look at the betting market, I would probably have them more in like the 4 to 5 range right now. But it's just what you said; they're so solid, so consistent. It's hard to bet against them. And I guess we did see 2 years ago when everyone turned on Sirianni and the team hated each other. They did kind of fall apart then. But I think it would take something like that again. I think it would take guys not being on the same page and hating each other for them to fall apart. And after you win a Super Bowl, it seems like that's probably pretty unlikely.
Tony, Kyle will love this. You know why Philadelphia is good and consistent? They're loaded with Georgia and Alabama guys, Ky.
That's true.
Uh-huh.
They are.
Especially Georgia. But
Kip, I'm gonna give you some 2-0s and some 0-2s. Tell me who goes to the playoffs, okay?
All right.
0-2 Dolphins.
No way.
0-2 Houston Texans. CJ Stroud does not look good. Their offense looks horrible.
Yeah,
I don't know what's going on with him. He looked so good last year. This year, the Houston Texans do not look good.
2 minutes and a half or a game, their defense is.
Oh bad. Man.
I'm going to contradict everything I said defending Bengals offensive line. The Texans offensive line is the worst I've seen in the NFL in like the last 4 years. They're what people think the Bengals are. They don't protect Stroud at all. They got to invest up front this offseason.
Yeah, this team is a big disappointment. I thought they were poised for and it's hilarious with all of the chorus of let's get D'Amico Ryans to Alabama right away. Pay him $20 million. Get DeBoer out of here after that first week of the season. I wonder if the battle cry would be the same right now because the Texans don't look so good.
The Swifty kiss of death. Think about it for a second. Kansas City Chiefs playoffs, yes or no?
I don't know about you guys, but I don't see it. I think this is the decline, and I think it's well in progress.
Any guys you want to chime in on that?
I've been the one beating the drum that the Chiefs weren't going to be good this year. I thought there were so many red flags, and I still just have PTSD for how they figure it out every year. So I'm still not ready to write them off. I will say this, and of course I didn't bet it. I think I remember talking about it on this show. I said no on them to win the AFC West at like even money was a great bet because I thought all the other teams in the AFC West were better. I will say no, they're not going to win the division, but I mean, they have a get right spot this week against the Giants. Eventually, they're going to get Rashee Rice and Xavier Worthy back. I still, in the back of my head, feel like they somehow sneak into the playoffs as a wild card that no one wants to play. So I'll say no division, but I'm not writing them off for the playoffs yet.
Yeah, obviously they got to get the starters back. I think they probably make the playoffs, which I hate because I mean, every time they're on TV, we have to see Taylor Swift 42 times.
Yeah.
And maybe not as much now that they're finally engaged and off and doing their thing. Baker Mayfield was running for his life yesterday. He had a 4th and 15 that he turned over. 2-0 Buccaneers, Skip, in or out?
I think they're in. I think they waltzed to the West Division title. I don't see any way they're going to be out.
Another team that I think is really, really interesting is those Indianapolis.
South Division, I'm sorry.
Yeah, the Indianapolis Colts sitting 2-0, looking pretty good in the AFC South.
Right now, I this Colts team's off to a good start. I'm not yet a believer, so I don't want to be taking the politically correct road. But right now, I'm still kind of up in the air. I'll say right now, they'll be good enough to be a wild card.
Record wise, the NFC West looking good.
I mean, in my opinion, Indiana Jones has looked good. And I mean, even this week, if the Titans don't let Cam Ward be Cam Ward and they keep handcuffing him, especially until the game gets out of control, then the Titans are going to lose again this week at home.
Yep. NFC
West, top to bottom. Yeah, top to bottom looks pretty good, too. 49ers, Cardinals, Rams. Give me your playoff team, Skip, out of those three teams.
I think the 49ers will be there. I haven't been high on the Rams, but I've been wrong. The Rams have looked really solid. So, you know, they're better than I gave them credit for. So right now I take 49ers, Rams, and the Cardinals are going to be the odd man out.
Case, what's your thoughts on some of these 2-0s and 0-2s?
All those NFC West teams look good. Don't forget about the Seahawks either, who arguably deserve to beat the 49ers. God, I loved the 49ers coming into this year. I have all kinds of bets on them basically to do everything. God, they are so beaten. They have like no receivers now. Kittle's out for a few weeks. Of course, Purdy's hurt. I think they're actually fine with Mac Jones. I think he pairs well with Shanahan. But just given their injury situation, it's hard for me. And I hate it because I have every future on them. I think they make the playoffs. Maybe they get healthy at the end of the year, but it's hard for me to say they win the division. Other 2-0, 0-2 teams. I'm trying to think. The Colts are the fascinating one to me. I've heard some people compare them to, last year at this time, we were all talking up the Saints and how great the offense looked. Kubiak's supposed to be the coordinator of the year, and then they totally fell off. I could see the Colts being that this year. There's no way they're as good as the offense they put up these first 2 weeks. But, hey, 2-0 is a big advantage in the South where we don't think any of these teams are that great. So that's one that really sticks out to me. Some of these teams we've talked about, I just want to touch on really quickly. I know you brought out the coaching talk sometime in the offseason, like who are the great coaches, who are the bad coaches. There's like three of these coaches that I just cannot trust for anything right now. Number one, I think that Callahan is just a completely terrible hire for the Titans. He doesn't even know the rules. He killed them in week one. I don't think this team is really that bad talent-wise, but one of the worst hires to go from Vrabel from him in recent memory. I cannot possibly get on board with him. And I thought D'Amico Ryans was pretty terrible in that game last night. It's funny you said people calling for him to be the Alabama coach. I think he's a great defensive coordinator, and you can't really argue with it. He's taken him to the playoffs 2 years in a row, gotten to the second round. So I my stock's kind of down on him right now. I think in game he makes a lot of mistakes. And I got to shout out Kip for this one. Just not that I loved the guy, but I didn't hate Raheem Morris getting a second chance just because he was at Tampa. He was 29 years old. Like, some of the players were older than him. You talk to people in the NFL, he's like the most beloved guy. Everyone just says that. You never will hear anyone say a bad word about Raheem Morris. But God, just the Falcons have absolutely no excuse. They should be 2-0. They should have scored way more points in the he made a ton of terrible blunders strategically in the Vikings game. So I'm super high on the Falcons, but it's hard for me to go all in on them when I just think I think their coach is a little outmatched.
What is that? What is that stat? Was it 17 years in a row that four teams every single year get in from the previous year that they didn't make it in? Is that right?
Four teams. Right. I mean, that sounds right.
It's crazy. For 17 teams that are 17 years in a row, four teams that did not make the playoffs the previous season make it in the following
season.
To
the NFL. Pretty crazy stuff.
I mean, it's unbelievable. Jays, Tigers, Mariners, Phillies, Brewers, Dodgers. American League, just getting on the outside looking in when it comes to wild card, three games out. A couple teams are. Cincinnati is the two games out. San Francisco game out. Arizona game and a half out. So you still got some wild card stuff going, about 10 to 12 ball games left. We got a guy, he's our baseball guy. Not a lot of moving and shaking. And we're just getting ready for the postseason.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, since Friday, you had Minnesota and the Angels eliminated from playoff contention. And in the National League, Washington was eliminated. And let's see, the Phillies clinched the division, and Milwaukee clinched the playoff spot. One of the huge things to look at when you're looking at this divisional race, I don't think the Yankees can catch Toronto, but as far as where they're going to be in the wild card race, they have a 70% winning rate over the teams they're playing to finish up. Where Boston has a below 50% rate, and Cleveland has a below 50% rate with who they have coming up. And so that might be something to look at, who's going to be the one and two wild cards.
I see where my Cincinnati Reds, according to ESPN, has a 7.7% chance of making the playoffs. I don't see it. This team just can't seem to get out of its own way. It's just sitting there at 500 all year long, but it should be really interesting. Is it too early to start looking at postseason, Case or Kai, about, you know, pitching matchups? I know the lineups are fixing the big. It's going to be a great postseason. I can't wait because we're seeing some teams, obviously. I haven't seen the Tigers there. I haven't seen the Mariners there. Phillies, I think, is always good. The Brewers came out of nowhere this year. The Dodgers, obviously, are there. The Jays. But it's going to be a great playoff season, man.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's too early. It's just something I haven't done. I kind of had my futures in place, and I've stuck to them. But, man, yeah, it does really look wide open. The one team I do have bets on that I honestly feel pretty good about, even though they seem to shoot themselves in the foot a lot. I mean, Seattle's now in the lead in the West, and I feel like they check every box. If they have all the arms, just sometimes they're prone to blow-ups. I would say I've been anti-Yankees all year, and I think Kai points out well they're going to match up with whoever they play well in the wild card. I'm kind of worried about the Yankees. I just think power-wise they have – I mean, I'm worried in that they can kill me because I just think – the lineup, I mean, they have so much power. It seems like the pitching staff's really solidified. I hope someone takes care of the Yankees, but it's been such all year. What's wrong with the Yankees? We hear all their fans complaining. And to me, it looks like that they're in pretty good position. Toronto, I've been a naysayer time and time again, that they just find a way to win these games. I think that runs out at some point, but I don't know. In the AL right now, I'm probably highest on Seattle and New York.
I'm not, I've not looked and seen how they've done head to head, but I just look at that Brewers Dodgers potential matchup, and everyone's obviously loving the major markets and the Dodgers. They spend the most money, but the Brewers are just a fun team. Go up there and eat a brat and have a pound of cheese and go to bed. What's the allure in their pitching lineup? This has been fantastic, but give me some futures on what we're looking at Major League Baseball wise to win a World Series.
I'll have to get them up real quick. I do not have that ready, but sure. I think for sure. I mean, the Dodgers, just with the name brand and the players they have, they've been the favorite from day one. I'm sure that hasn't changed. It's like now they kind of have the pitching down and they can't get runs. I did bet a bunch of Dodgers just because I thought they were going to be so loaded this year, and it ultimately hasn't happened. So World Series, I'll have them up now. I have the Dodgers 4-1. Phillies plus 550, Brewers plus 675, Detroit plus 750, 8-1 Toronto, 9-1 New York, Diego 12-1. I mean, if I had to make a bet just based off my, just from the hip here, a little bit longer odds, I still like Seattle. I think they check a lot of boxes. So go Mariners.
There you go. K4wins.com. K4wins.com is the website. Of course, you can check out Kip. He's on a multitude of different formats, including Jocks, and he's also on Talk 99.5 here locally in Birmingham. We do a show called The Starting Lineup where you can see all four of us on almost weekly, 10:30, 11 o'clock. We were right up against that Wisconsin-Alabama game this past week, which was fantastic. We were a great walk-in, if you will, to the ABC-SEC game of the week. We'll do it again kind of this weekend on ABC 3340 here locally. And, of course, you can also check us on our YouTube channel on ABC 3340, The Starting Lineup, and Tony Curry Radio. Check that out. And of course, we could not do it without our fine folks in the Coastal Sports Digital Network. They do fantastic work. Thanks to Pete and Angel, the entire crew, for putting on there. Any last thoughts, my man? We'll get together again on Friday. You've got three more days to get nasty and get dirty and start pulling out some games. I doubt I'm going to have a 24-point game winning outright this weekend, but you never know what's going to happen. Hopefully, I got that bad weekend of picks out of my system. But anything else, guys?
Go ahead, Case.
No one will like this one, but we're not going to be here by Thursday Night Football. I think 12.5 is way too many. I'm betting that I've already bet the Dolphins. I like Miami at Buffalo on Thursday Night Football.
Wow.
You're going to have to hold your nose, but that's too many.
That is a lot in the NFL.
If Miami actually shows up, but I'm going to go with I'm going to be looking some more before Saturday, but I think y'all are giving Temple too much credit. I'm still going to stick with Georgia Tech. Temple beat UMass and Howard.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
And then Florida State giving up 46. Kent State lost by 48 to Texas Tech. Who's the better team, Florida State?
Yeah, that's interesting.
Covering where I'll get backdoored again.
I didn't see a whole lot going into this week when I scanned the lineup, but I hope as a person that wants to see justice done, I hope Illinois is decent enough to drub Indiana. I am so tired of Indiana. The first three games they've played are the biggest joke of all time. Although Old Dominion Virginia Tech doesn't think they're a joke now, but unbelievable, guys. We've already had two power conference coaches fired in week three. I don't know if that's ever happened before, but I hope Illinois beats Indiana because I am so tired of Kurt Cignetti and his pretend program, the Hoosiers last year, who have played absolutely nobody in 2 years.
And if they end up looking impressive, it's a 9-19 matchup. If they end up, they're a 4-point favorite. If they end up beating Illinois, the Fighting Illini, by 7. I don't really know what that tells me about Indiana.
They're at home again. You know what I mean? Of course,
they're at home again. It's against Illinois. It's not Ohio State. It's not Penn State. It's not Michigan. But is that an impressive win? I guess we'll find out at the end of the season.
I laid it with Indiana.
Did you?
Don't be taking my boy Altmaier.
He has been impressive. He's been better than I thought.
Altmaier is from Starkville, Mississippi, and he went to Ole Miss. That tells you this guy is a free thinker, and he winds up in Illinois like so many SEC players. I said it on another show last week. I hope the next wall Trump builds is at the Mason-Dixon line so all these Southern guys stop going to the damn Big Ten.
There you go. Gentlemen, thank you so much. Appreciate you. We'll see you again Friday morning, 10 o'clock Central, right here on the Coastal Sports Digital Network and on Tony Curry Radio. Thank you, guys.
All right.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.